ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय संसार सागरे मग्नं दीनं मां करुणानिधे कर्मग्राह गृहीताङ्गं मामुद्धर भवार्णवाल् श्रीमल्भागवदाख्योऽयं प्रत्यक्ष कृष्णमेव हि स्वीकृतोऽसि मया नाथ मुक्त्यर्थं भवसागरे मनोरथे मदीयोऽयं सफला सर्वदा त्वया निर्विघ्नेनैव कर्तव्यं दासोऽहं तव केशव भवे भवे यथा भक्ति पादयोस्तव जायते तथा कुरुष्व देवेश नाथत्वं नो यद प्रभो नाम संकीर्तनं यस्य सर्वपापप्रणाशनं प्रणामो दुःखशमनं तं नमामि हरिं परम् जन्माद्यस्य यतोऽन्वयादितरदश्चाप्तेष्वभिज्ञस्वरा तेने ब्रह्महृदाय आदिकवये मुह्यन्ति यल्सूरया तेजो वारिमृदम् यथा विनिमयो यत्र त्रिसर्गो मृष धाम्ना स्वेन सदा निरस्तकुहकम् सत्यम् परम् धीमहि धर्म प्रोचित कैदवोत्र वरमो निर्मत्सराणाम् सदाम् वेद्यम् वास्तवमत्र वस्तु शिवदम् तापत्रयोन्मूलनम् श्रीमद्भागवते महामुनि कृते किं वा परैरीश्वर सद्यो हृद्यवरुद्यतेऽत्र कृतिभिः शुश्रूषुभिः तत्क्षणात् निगमकल्पदरोर्गलितम् फलम् शुभमुखादमृतद्रव संयुतम् पिबद भागवतम् रसमालयम् मुहुरहो रसिका भुवि भावुकाः सच्चिदानन्दरूपाय विश्वोत्पत्यादिहेतवे तापत्रयविनाशाय श्रीकृष्णाय वयम् नुमाम् यम् प्रव्रजन्तमनुपेतमपेतकृत्यम् द्वैपायनो विरहकातरमजुभाव पुत्रेति तन्मयदयत्तरवोऽभिनेतु तम् सर्वभूतहृदयम् मुनिम् आनतोऽस्मि यस्वानुभावमखिलश्रुतिसारमेकम् अध्यात्मदीपमदितिदीर्षदाम् तमोन्धम् संसारिणाम् करुणयाः पुराणगुह्यम् तम् व्याससूनुमुपयामि गुरुम् मुनीनाम् नारायणम् नमस्कृत्य नरम् चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीम् सरस्वतीम् व्यासम् ततो जयमुदीरये कमनीयकिशोरमुग्धमूर्ते कलवेणुकोणिदादृदानेन्दोः मम वाचि विजृम्भदा मुरारे मधुरिन्न कनिकापि कापि कापि मम ॐ विष्णुपदाय कृष्णप्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामीति नामिने नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणि प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषशून्यवादि पाश्चात्यादिशतारिणे श्रीमद्गुरुचरणारविन्दाभ्याम् नमः वन्दे नन्दव्रजस्त्रीणाम् पादरेणुमभीष्णश या संहरिगतोद्गीतम् पुनाधीभुवनत्रयम् गोपीचरणारविन्दपरमाणवे नमः पीताम्बरम् करविराजितचक्रशङ्खम् कौमोदयी सरसिजम् करुणासमुद्रम् राधासहायम् अतिसुन्दरमन्दहासम् वातालेशमनिशम् कृतिभावयामि कोमलम् कूजयन् वेणम् श्यामलोऽयम् कुमारग वेदवेद्यपरम् ब्रह्म भासताम् पुरतो मम मूकम् करोति वाचालम् पङ्गुम् लङ्घयति गिरिम् यत्कृपातमहम् वन्दे परमानन्दमाधवम् ॐ श्रीकृष्णाय नमः श्रीमन्दिरायै नमः सर्वत्र गोविन्द नाम सङ्कीर्तनम् गोविन्द गोविन्द Srimad Bhagavatam, last Sunday, before last Sunday, we were talking from Ekadasha Skanda. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, out of the 12 cantos, Ekadasha Skanda has a direct instruction from Krishna to Uddhava, and also discussion between Sri Narada Maharshi and Vasudev, Krishna's father. These are the two main topics that is discussed in Canto 11. Generally, if you travel around in India, you will see that whenever Srimad Bhagavatam is discussed, in almost all cases, 99.9% you will see that Ekadasha Skandam is not discussed. Reason being that most of the people who take to Srimad Bhagavatam, they find it very difficult, because Ekadasha Skandam is particularly a very deep topic which Krishna has instructed to Uddhava prior to his departure from this world. And therefore, to understand it and not to feel sleepy is very difficult, number one. Number two, to capture what Krishna has spoken to Uddhava and to understand the depth of that knowledge what Krishna has revealed to Uddhava requires a lot of thought process. A lot of thinking is required. Without thinking, to capture that is very difficult, because it is all concerned with the subtle aspects of us. Particularly in relationship with the mind, intelligence, and senses and the soul. This is the topic that is discussed mostly in this in the Canto 11. So Canto 11 is generally not discussed at all, for one reason only, that majority of the people who come, they do not have that interest to listen to that, and nor do they have that time to go through it in detail, and they find it very difficult. So often you will notice that Bhagavata Saptaham, what is conducted in many, many places, is generally mostly referred to the rest of Bhagavatam. They will just go through Ekadasham, read through it, and then finish the Srimad Bhagavata Saptaham. Because to discuss Ekadasha Skandam requires a continuous attention and also a lot of reflection and contemplation of what has been spoken in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, that is one thing. Now, we are discussing in the Bhagavatam about the arrival of the sages who came to on request from Krishna, and due to their presence, how all the different things happened. We are talking about that. Because if you remember, in the beginning of Bhagavatam, Sudeva Goswami said one word. What was that? Yasya anubhavam akhila shruti saram ekam adhyatma deepam atititirshadam tamondham. Yasya anubhavam, his own experience he is narrating here. That is what is important. Sukadeva Goswami's personal experience he is talking about. Yasya anubhavam akhila shruti saram ekam. The shruti saram, the essence of all the Vedic literature, is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that is what Sukadeva Goswami is serving the feast in Ekadasham. He is serving the feast. Sudhisaryamegam adhyalpadeepam adhititirshadam tamondham. Adhyalpadeepam, that is another word for Srimad Bhagavatam. Adhyalpadeepam means the torchlight of spiritual knowledge. That is what Srimad Bhagavatam is. And that is particularly in reference to Ekadasha Skandam. Adhyalpadeepam adhititirshadam tamondham. It is very difficult to overcome this Adititirshadam tamandham, our tamogunam, and the darkness what we have fallen into. Why did he do that? Samsarinam karuna eva purana guhyam. Because he felt compassion for those who come in Kaliyugam, and who also, not only in Kaliyugam, those who wants to get out of this cycle of birth and death, feeling compassion for them. Samsarinam karuna eva purana guhyam. Therefore, simply out of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls who are going through this cycle of birth and death, Sudeva Goswami revealed, discussed the Srimad Bhagavatam. That is how he begins in the, and that you will see that his compassion in this canto. In canto 11 you will see Sudeva Goswami's compassion. How he is cutting through the knots of ignorance, what we are fallen into by his realizations. By Sudeva Goswami's realizations. In fact, it is like this, that all of these great souls, all the great spiritual personalities, they are all inviting us to come and share this knowledge in the Vedic literature. But people do not have the interest for that. They keep the shop open, but nobody is there to buy it. This is the difficulty. So, it is not only Sudeva Goswami's situation, it is the situation with almost all the great spiritual personalities. They want to share with us that realization, but we are unable to take it because we are captivated by the Maya, Krishna's illusory energy. So, therefore, Ekadasha Skandam particularly refers to mukti, liberation. As soon as somebody says liberation, we get frightened. Oh, we don't, that's the only thing we don't want now. I've just got married, I've got my family life, children, everything to grow up, so many things to do in life, we'll keep that in pending for a while. So, this is how we see it. Mukti, we'll all talk about mukti. When Krishna says, okay, here is mukti, in Ekadasha Skandam is, topic discussed is mukti. Maybe that is the reason most of the people do not want it. Because mukti is not what we are looking for. So that is another thing take note of. Srimad Bhagavatam, especially this Ekadasha Skandam, when one once reads and understands it, then naturally the mind turns inwards. It does not want to wander around too much outside. Because Ekadasha drives us inwards. It doesn't drive outwards. As I said before, 10th canto, Dashamaskandam was Pravarti Leela, Krishna's pastimes in the outside world, Pravarti Leela, activities. Whereas Ekadasha is Nivrti Leela, how to get out of all these things. After going through this whole thing, realizing the temporary nature of material life, the miseries of material life, and when a soul sincerely wants to free himself from this conditioned existence, he looks up to Ekadasha Skandam. So that is where the beauty of Bhagavatam is. That the Nivrti Leela, freeing from one cycle of birth and death, that is what is discussed in the Ekadasha Skandam. So, as I said before, that the Krishna arranged in such a way that the great sages had to come, and you will notice the list of those jnanis. They are all great sages and jnanis mentioned there. Vishwamitra, Asida, Kannu, Durvasa, Bhrigu, Angira, Kashyapo, Vamadevo, Atri, Vasishtho, Naradadeya. These are the great personalities who came and they cursed the Krishna's children and grandchildren. They were involved in that. They were involved in offending them. As we spoken about that before, that they dressed Samba, Krishna's son from Jambavati. Samba was dressed up like a pregnant woman. They held him far away from the sages and asked the sages whether the child who will be born from that woman will be a boy or a girl. So the sages, fully knowing very well question, fully understanding that they were very cynical. That's what it was. They were very cynical. And seeing their cynicism, the sages decided, knowing well that what Krishna wanted them to do, they cursed the Yadavas. They cursed the Yadavas to kill themselves by fighting each other. Also, Krishna is pointing out to us that in our family life, also in this world, ultimately this is what happens, all fighting each other and going in different directions. Krishna says, in my family also it is like that, it's not much different. So, generally all family life ends up like this, in some arguments or fighting, and goes away in different ways, and Krishna says, and that's exactly what happens in this family life, including me. So, this is also an indication of that, through this winding up these pastimes here. So, Atri Vasishtan Bhrigu. Atri Vasishtan Bhrigu Durvasav Angirasa Srinarada Maharshi Vishwamitran Asita Maharshi Kannu Maharshi. These were all the personalities, all great, great souls. So, you will see there these personalities who are mentioned, they were actually the young people, the yuvav, they call the yuvav, youth. The youth English word came from the Sanskrit word yuvav. Youth has come from that. And they made a joke of these sages, and sages cursed them to die themselves. In the Bhagavatam, if you look seriously, you will see there, when Krishna appeared in Gokul, first time, when Krishna appeared in Gokul, Vasudeva and Devaki had the good fortune of seeing Krishna in the beginning, isn't it? Vasudeva and Devaki had the good fortune of seeing Krishna. So, after seeing Krishna, Vasudeva glorified Krishna. If you look in the 10th canto, 3rd chapter, verse 13. Yes. There, Krishna gave the... allowed Vasudevs to see him, who Krishna is. And as soon as Vasudev saw Krishna, immediately all the ignorance has gone away from Vasudev's mind. Completely Vasudev became self-realized. Otherwise he has transcended the three stages of existence. Up to that time, Jagrat, Sapnam and Sushupti was the situation. But as soon as he saw Krishna, immediately Krishna gave them that and gave him the freedom to see him who he is and to understand who he is. If you see Vasudeva's prayers, how he has praised Krishna. Vididosi bhavan sakshal purusha prakrite para kevalana bhavananda swarupa sarvabhutidrak. There, Krishna is glorified like this. Vididosi bhavan sakshal purusha prakrite para. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead beyond the three modes of material nature. Where did Vasudeva get this idea from? How did Vasudeva come to know that the person who was standing in front of him was the Supreme Personality of Godhead beyond the three modes of material nature? Not only that, kevalani bhavananda swarupa sarva buddhidrak. Not only that, seeing Krishna immediately brought Vasudeva to realize the knowledge of Ekadasha Skandam. That is what he said in that word. Kevalani bhavananda swarupa sarva buddhidrak. That in the Srimad Bhagavatam, as well, Bhagavad Gita as well also, the point what is stressed very important is the role of the soul in the living entity. The soul is a part and parcel of Krishna. So, due to the presence of the soul, all the other activities we are able to carry out, isn't it? The mind is functioning, intelligence is functioning, senses are functioning, body is functioning, all because of one thing, because of the presence of the soul in the body. So this presence of the soul, unless and until one experiences it, one cannot know that it is the, this is called self-realization, knowing the self. What is self means? We don't know what is the self. At the moment, we identify with the body. Majority of the people identify with the body, and they call themselves as that, as the themselves, as that is the self for them. Some people identify with the mind and call it as the self. Some people identify with the intelligence and calls it as the self. But hardly anyone, till the point we identify with the soul, that doesn't happen. Because we haven't realized ourselves, the self-realization is not there. So we identify with the false things. Generally, sometimes we say, I'm not this body, isn't it? Those who have studied Bhagavad Gita, they will always say this, I'm not this body. But strictly speaking, that statement is also not 100% true, because we are not only this body, I'm not this mind either, I'm not the intelligence either, I'm not the senses either, I'm not the body either, then what am I? That question will come. That is what Vasudeva is saying here. Kevalani bhavananda swarupa sarva bhutidrak. Sarva bhutidrak. That drak inside, who is illuminating the whole activities of the living entity. That is the soul, that is Krishna. So, here Vasudeva is saying to him, Vasudeva is glorifying Krishna like this. Just like the example is given like this. Many, many examples are there to illustrate this fact. When you see the cinema, when you see the film, what do you normally see? There is the projector. The cinema projector is there. And then the film is there, the roll of film, which is constantly rolling in front of the projector. Isn't it? Constantly rolling in front of the projector. The light is coming from the back. And then through the lenses, the whole thing is projected onto a screen. Isn't it? Whole thing is projected onto a screen. So when the film is rolling and the light is projected, we see the film on the screen. We see the film on the screen. And we watch the film, enjoy it, and we or like it or dislike it, whichever way it is, this thing goes on. It is more or less the same thing with us also. Behind us is the spirit soul projector standing there, or the light coming through the projector is this soul. And then we have our vasanas and karma is rolling in this reel in the front. Our vasanas which we have brought from the previous life, and our own karma vasanas, and our own karma, different karma we have executed, that is a mixture of, that is this film reel. It is rolling in front of the soul. And the lenses are the senses. The senses are the lenses. So when the light or the soul is projecting through this vasanas outside, it finds these senses, which are actually the lenses, and through which our activities begin in this material world. That is what our human life is all about. This is an example just to illustrate how our activities in this world is very much like this cinema projector. So, this activities what we continue in this world day after day is nothing but the karma vasanas that we have brought with us, which is being projected on this screen. As you can see, it doesn't affect the screen. Because the screen is there, in the screen, all these activities are going on. All these activities are going on in the screen. But screen is not affected. Similarly, as much as we are identifying with the body, mind, intelligence, and the soul is allowing us to function in this way, our activities continue in the material world. So, Vasudev spoke about Krishna like this, and he immediately got realized. He got self-realized automatically because of Krishna's presence. And Krishna wanted Vasudev to understand who he is, which he understood straight away. And then what happened after that? Devaki Devi started glorifying Krishna. If you look into Bhagavatam, you will see there Devaki Devi's glorification also immediately after that. This verse, where Vasudev says, Vididosi Bhavan Sakshal Purusha Prakrade Para Kevalana Bhavananda Sarubam Sarvabuddhidrak. In that way, Vasudev glorified him. And if you look into Devaki Devi's prayers, what happens? Devaki Devi's prayers is not much different from Vasudev's. Equally powerful and equally on a realized platform. Not ordinary people. We don't pray like this, like Vasudev and Devaki has prayed. Devaki Devi is saying, Rubam yal tal prahura vyaktamadhyam brahma jyotir nirgunam nirvigaram satamatram nirvishesham niriham satvam sakshal vishnu adhyal madivam. That is Devaki Devi's prayers. Rubam yal tal prahura vyaktamadhyam brahma jyotir nirgunam nirvigaram satamatram nirvishesham niriham satvam sakshal vishnu adhyal madivam. So, it's a very highly advanced state of realization of a great soul, what Devaki Devi's prayers are. Talking about Krishna's position beyond the three modes of material nature. And also, Sata Matram Nirvishesham Niriham. That difficult for ordinary people to understand. Satvam Sakshal Vishnu Adhyatma Divam is the torchlight of spiritual knowledge, the spiritual power, the spiritual essence of all spiritual Adhyatma Divam, that is who is present in front of me. Devaki Devi glorifies like this. So if you look into both Vasudev's prayers and Devaki Devi's prayers, you will see they are not from this world. They are not prayers from the ordinary personalities. generally, normally people don't pray like this to Krishna, do we? We normally come to prayers with our list of requests, isn't it? That is ordinary conditioned soul's prayers. But here you see, Vasudev and Devaki, when they pray to Krishna, they don't pray, they didn't pray like us, like not even like a father or a mother. Father or a mother wouldn't say like this to the son, would they? But strictly, they were seeing Krishna as the Supreme Personality. In other words, the Absolute Truth. They realized Krishna as the Absolute Truth, and in that way, they prayed to Him. In that way, they prayed to Krishna, as though they realized Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After doing that, in a few minutes, if you look into their prayers, you will see they were frightened of Kamsa. They were frightened of Kamsa. That's also mentioned there, that Devaki Vacha, Sri Devaki Devi is saying, all the Devaki Devi's prayers, if you look, Nashte Loge Dibarardha Vasani, Mahabhudeshu Adi Bhudam Gadeshu, Vyakte Vyaktam Kalavege Nayade, Bhavanega Shishade, Sheshasam Yam. In this way, they prayed to Krishna. They glorified Krishna, both of them, Vasudeva and Devaki. And immediately, as soon as these prayers were finished, Sri Shukan says about them, Adhainam Atmajam Vikshamaha Purusha Lakshanam Devaki Tamubhadhaval Kamsalbhida Shujismidaha. So, if they have experienced that truth, they have experienced the Absolute Truth, Krishna's presence, how come they got frightened? Because, that's an important question there. Once you have come to self-realization stage, there is no question of getting frightened in this world about anything, isn't it? Fear is over, because fear is only in the conditioned state. That is what we will see there, where this fear has come from. We have discussed this before, where is the fear coming from? Manye kudaschil bhayam achudasya pada ambujobhasayam atra nityam udigna buddhe asadalma bhaval vishualpana yatra nivartadevi. Kavi Maharshi said this in his prayers, first verse. Manye kudaschil bhayam achudasya pada ambujobhasayam atra nityam. So long as we are not engaged in Krishna's service, in glorifying Krishna or in chanting the holy name, till that point we will feel the fear of this world. That's what you have seen. So this fear is always there. Every living entity in this material world is always under fear. Some form of fear is always following him. And here you find Vasudeva and Devaki, after coming out of all this and seeing Krishna and realizing who Krishna is, they have fallen back into that condition again. They have fallen back to that condition again, to their original consciousness. Why is it happened? Because of Maya. It was Maya's energy which has done this to them. They were taken out of Maya for some time by Krishna's arrangement, and they were brought back to Maya again by Krishna's arrangement. That is when the fear came back about Kamsa. After knowing Krishna, who He is, Supreme Personality of Godhead, right in front of them, and glorifying them as the Absolute Truth, then they are falling back into this fear. So you can see how fragile the whole situation is for everybody. That when we come out of Maya, even in spiritual life also this happens. In the beginning, sometimes Krishna shows some compassion to the devotee. In the beginning He shows some compassion. And He gives one or two little realizations to him in his own life. And at that point, he feels more confident and he feels shelter in Krishna's lotus feet. He feels the shelter. But then after a while, he comes back again to his original state and he starts crying from then. Why, I am not feeling that anymore. This happens in everyone's life. Every devotee, if you ask them, they will all know this, that sometimes Krishna gives them something, but she takes it back later. And to make him feel, why did he do that? In order to increase the taste for the devotee to continue in spiritual life. Otherwise, if everything is so easily accessible, he will not put any endeavor for that, nor will he get that purification what's necessary. So therefore, the same experience for Vasudeva and Devaki also has happened here. That is what is mentioned there. that after seeing Krishna, they got frightened, thinking that Kamsa will kill us. And this is the most interesting thing, that they got frightened that Kamsa may kill us. And this is the name of Maya. Maya's power, you can see how she applied them on Vasudeva and Devaki as well at that instance. And even if you look into Gobi's life also, Gobi's also said the same thing. If in the verse chapter 29, you can see in chapter 29 that Gobi's are saying, verse 10, Gobi say, Dusaha Preshta Viraha Tivrata Batutha Shubhaha Dhyana Prapta Achira Ashlesha Nurvritya Kshina Mangalaha. Then Krishna left the Gobi's and ran away from there, from the middle of Rasa dance, when Krishna left the gopis and went away. At that time, Andargrahada Kaschal Gopya Labdhamir Gamaha Krishnam Tadbhavana Yukta Tadhyurmili Dalochanaha Dusaha Prashtaviraha Tibrata Vatutha Shudaha Dhyana Prapta Achuda Ashlesha Nurvurti Akshina Mangalaha. It says there that Dusaha Prashtaviraha Tibrata Vatutha Shudaha, that what happened is that when Krishna left the gopis in the middle of Rasa dance, they felt that separation unbearable. But because of that separation, and that they felt that unhappiness or distress they experienced, that all their sinful activities got burned away by that separation of Krishna. That's what they said. Dusaha Preshta Viraha Tibrata Vatutha Shubhaha. That they could not bear it anymore, that separation from Krishna. And at that time, that separation is mentioned here, that that all their sinful reactions, all their sinful activities have been wiped out because of that. Dhyana Prapta Achyuda Ashlesha Nurvritya Kshina Mangalaham. That not only that, in their meditation about Krishna, Krishna has embraced them, that feeling from them, and they gave him so much happiness also to them. So everywhere you will find, at some point, Krishna is separated from the devotee. Krishna is not continuously accessible for the devotee. He is always giving some instances, a taste of what is Krishna. At some point he gives to devotee, and sometimes he withdraws from that situation. With Vasudevan same happened, with Devaki also, Devaki Devi also same thing happened, and also with the gopis. So from here you can see that in our own consciousness, so long as we are fixed up in Krishna's glorification or hearing about Krishna, the other activities of the mind won't disturb us. It will not disturb us. But sometimes, when we pull out from Krishna's, glorifying Krishna's and Krishna's service, at that point, the old chittavritti means the different thought process will come back, and it will start disturbing us again. That will come back to us powerfully. That so, this is the reason why it is said, it is so important to associate with the devotees, and particularly where Srimad Bhagavatam is discussed. Because that is the only way one can purify oneself and not allow the mind to fall into that illusion. Because it is said here that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, particularly in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that Swadu Swadu Pade Pade, it says like that. The more we hear about Krishna, great jnanis have vouched for this. They have confirmed this point. It's not a new thing. It's already been established by that. That is why in the beginning of the Bhagavatam itself, Vedavyasa says, Swadu Swadu Pade Pade. What does it mean? That the more you take Bhagavatam inside, the more you get the taste increases for Srimad Bhagavatam. Normally in life, if something is given to us, say a nice thing to eat, a few laddus, when they give you the first laddu, you like it. When you give the second laddu, you feel, I don't think I can take it, or you can take a little bit of it. By the third laddu, again somebody gives you a third one, you find it difficult. By the fourth one, you started yelling at him, take it away from me, I don't want to see it. That is the material life. In material life, every happiness is like that. It's only in the beginning. Not swadu swadu pade pade. Whereas Srimad Bhagavatam, the more Bhagavatam goes inside, the more you want to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the difference between Laddu and Srimad Bhagavatam. In Laddu, this is what happens. A little Laddu goes inside. Afterwards, you want to give it up. Had enough of it. The taste is gone. Because there is no more taste for it. Whereas in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Swadu Swadu Pade Pade. That is how Srimad Bhagavatam is enjoyed. So, Vasudeva was given this experience. And after that, this incident, at the time of appearance, often Vasudeva will ask others about Krishna consciousness. Now and then he will inquire about it. Although he did not get that opportunity to hear sufficiently about Krishna, and plus Maya has kept them under this tight control as that to see Krishna as their son. Because Krishna has originally told them, Yuvavam putra bhavena brahma bhavena chasakal, that you should see us, Krishna, as your son. At the same time, you should also see us as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That didn't happen. Only saw him as the child. This is what has happened to Vasudeva and Devaki. So now, here, Vasudeva and Devaki were inquiring all the time to different people. They wanted to hear about more about it, but they didn't know how to inquire further. So now an opportunity had come for them to inquire from Sri Narada Maharshi. These great sages, they travel throughout the universe, not for any other reason, just to illuminate the conditioned souls. That is their duty, their service to Krishna. All those names mentioned there, Vishwamitra Maharshi, Angiras, Kannu Maharshi, Bhrigu, Atri, Vasishtha, and Sri Narada Maharshi, they are all great jnanis, great realized souls, and they, out of compassion for us, they come to this world and illuminate us through their relationship with Krishna. And Vishwamitra Maharshi is particularly, if you see Vishwamitra Maharshi's history throughout Ramayanam and Mahabharatam and Srimad Bhagavatam also, you will see there that without Vishwamitra, Sri Rama, Lord Ramachandra is not there, Krishna is also not there. In both of their pastimes, Vishwamitra Maharshi had a very important role. You will see in the Ramayanam, when Vishwamitra Maharshi came to take Ramachandra away from the palace, from Dasharatha, King Dasharatha. Dasharatha was not willing to send him, not willing to send Ramachandra with Vishwamitra. Vishwamitra comes and says to Dasharatha Maharaj, Vishwamitra is a very grave person. All the jnanis are very, very grave. Because by nature, they are very kind-hearted. But in order that people don't exploit them or give them trouble, they keep a grave mood all the time. And Vishwamitra was also like that when he came to see Dasharatha Maharaj. So when he came to see Dasharatha Maharaj, and Dasharatha Maharaj glorified Vishwamitra for coming to the palace and received him properly and asked him about the purpose of his visit. When Vishwamitra told Dasharatha, King Dasharatha, that he wanted to take Ramachandra away from there, Dasharatha refused. Dasharatha could not bear separation from Ramachandra. It was at that time, Vasishtha Maharshi told Dasharatha Maharaj, you don't know who is Vishwamitra. That is why you have not allowed to send Ramachandra. You have not agreed to send Ramachandra with him. It will be only for Ramachandra's benefit by sending him with him. Dasharatha Maharaj, when he heard that Vishwamitra had difficulties with the Rakshasas, the demons who were giving him trouble in the forest, Dasharatha himself offered to go with him and to kill the demons. But Vishwamitra didn't want that. Rather, Vishwamitra wanted Ramachandra to go with him. And Dasharatha Maharaj didn't want that. It was at that point, Vasishtha Maharshi told Dasharatha that let Ramachandra go with him, because Ramachandra must go with Vishwamitra, it will be only for his benefit. And Unam Shodashami Shodashavarshomi Ramo Rajiva Lochanam. Ramo Rajiva Lochana. Rama's attachment to Ramachandra was so strong in Dasharatha's mind. Ramo Rajiva Lochana, that lotus eye Ramachandra, how can I stay? He's only Unam Shodashavarshomi. He's only 16 years old. How can I stay away from him? This is how he spoke. Dasharatha Maharaj spoke. But when Vasishtha Maharshi, at that point, Vishwamitra Maharshi says to Vishwamitra Maharshi says to Dasharatha Maharaj, Sukhi Bhava Suhrul Sakaha, that okay, you live at home comfortably with your so-called family, Sukhi Bhava Suhrul Sakha, all with your friends, family and all, you stay comfortably at home. Saying this, he was going to walk out from there. Because Vishwamitra Maharshi understood Dasharatha's mood, that he didn't want to part with Ramachandra. Although Vishwamitra Maharshi had a higher understanding of things, what was going to happen in the future, and he wanted to take Ramachandra away, but Dasharatha Maharaj was not willing to send him. It was at that point that Vasishtha Maharshi interfered and told Dasharatha to send Ramachandra with Vishwamitra, and Ramachandra and Lakshmana went with Vishwamitra at that point. So while leaving the palace, Ramachandra and Lakshmana looked at Vishwamitra, and Vishwamitra looked very serious and very, very grave. But after they went through the forest, after a while, when they started walking, they realized Vishwamitra's kind heart. At that point, Vishwamitra addresses Ramachandra, Rama, Rama, he called him like that. And by that very call itself, Ramachandra felt as though it was a call from his grandfather. That is how Valmiki discusses it in Ramayana. That it was just like his grandfather's call. To such an extent, they felt comfortable with Vishwamitra at that point. Such a powerful stage Vishwamitra was. Throughout Ramayanam, as well as in the Mahabharatam, you will see the role Vishwamitra has played in the assistance of Ramachandra, as well as in the Krishna's pastimes. Here also you see the same thing. Among all the sages, first name mentioned is Vishwamitra. People say Vishwamitra, that is unfriendly. Actually, he is not Vishwamitra. He is a Mitra, he is a friend of the whole Vishwam, whole creation, or the whole universe. He is a friend of the universe. He is well-wisher of the living entities. And he executes these pastimes for the pleasure of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, Durvasa Maharshi, if you look into the next personality, who was there? Vasasa means clothes. Who once wear the clothes? His clothes were Durvasa, means always very dirty and never wore proper clothes, torn or worn out or fully soiled clothes he wore. That is Durvasa Maharshi. But his austerities and penances were so high that Krishna calls him as my spiritual master in one instance. Krishna calls Durvasa Muni as his spiritual master. And if you see the pastime in the ninth canto with Ambarish, King Ambarish Maharaj, people think that, oh, Durvasa got offended because Ambarish Maharaj was such a great devotee that due to his prayers, Durvasa was punished. Actually, in that pastime, you can see there at the end of that pastime, after the whole scene was over, Durvasa Maharshi goes around all over the creation and glorifies Ambarish Maharaj. What do we understand from that? Suppose I got snubbed somewhere. Let's assume like that. For any one of us for that matter. Got snubbed somewhere. Will I go around declaring the whole world that I got snubbed here, or will I keep quiet? In the Bhagavatam, it is very clear that Durvasa Maharshi says there that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, he goes around and says everyone that this thing happened to me with Ambarish Maharaj. By doing that, actually, Durvasa Maharshi was actually glorifying Ambarish Maharaj and the devotee. That is the role Durvasa has played in that pastime with Ambarish Maharaj. So these are the personalities whom Krishna has chosen to visit him, and also in that process they cursed the children, the grandchildren, they were cursed by him. Srinarada Maharshi, if you take, who is Srinarada Maharshi? Srinarada Maharshi's definition is like this. Naram paramatma vishayagam jnanam dadadi iti Narada. Narada Maharshi's role is like this. Naram paramatma vishayagam jnanam dadadi. The knowledge about the absolute truth. Paramatma vishayagam jnanam. The knowledge about the absolute truth. One who gives that, dadadi iti Narada. He is Narada Maharshi. That is Narada Maharshi's role. So these personalities, they are all jnanis. They are all great souls, realized souls. And they come here whenever Krishna's Krishna's pastimes, they had a role to play. They always come here to see Krishna and to participate in those pastimes according to Krishna's desire. That is what you find there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, so, if you look into the second chapter, you will see there that Sri Shuka Uvacha, Sri Shuka Uvacha, Canto 11, Chapter 2, Sri Shuka Uvacha, Govinda Bhajaguptayam Dwaravatyam Kurudduha Aval Silnaradho Vishnam Krishna Upasana Lalasa Kunu Rajan Indriyavan Mukunda Charanambujam Nabaja El Sarvado Mrityu Upasya Mamaro Uttamai Tameka Dado Vivarshi Vasudevo Grihavagadam Archidam Sukamasiya Abhivadyedam Abravil Sri Vasudeva Uvacham Bhagavan Bhagado Yatra Sustaye Sarvadehinam Kripa Kripananam Yatha Pitro Uttamashwagavarpanam Bhutanam Devajaridam Dukhaya Sukhaya Sukhaya Vahisadhunam Tadrusha Achyudalpanam Bhajandiye Yatha Devan Deva Abhitadhaivadan Chayeva Karma Sajiva Savodhina Valsala Brahman Sadhavi Prachamo Dharman Bhagavadam Sava Yan Shutva Shadhaya Matya Uchade Sarvado Bhayal aham kila puranandam prajartho mukti bhuvi muktidam abhujayam namokshaya mohido deva mahaya yatha vijitra vyasal bhavadhar vishado bhayal mucchiyam anjaseva thadana shariso vradam. Sri Shuka Uvacha begins like this. The second chapter begins like this. Govinda Bhujaguptayam dwaravatyam kuyu dvaham. Govinda Bhujaguptayam, Sudeva Goswami says, Dwaragapuri was protected by Krishna's arms. In other words, Govinda Bhujaguptayam Dwaravatyam Kuru Dvaham, that Dwaraga was protected by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna Himself. And there, it by Krishna's hands it is protected. Sudeva Goswami insists that there. Why? Because to show that normally things cannot go wrong there. Nothing can go wrong in Dwaraga. Nothing will go wrong in Dwaraka because the Supreme Lord was present Himself there. And that is where these things have happened. What has happened? Avalsil Narado Bhishnam Krishna Upasana Lalasa. Avalsil Narado Bhishnam Krishna Upasana Lalasa. Sri Narada Maharshi comes to Dwaraka for what? Krishna Upasana Lalasa. Krishna Upasana. In order to be near to Upasana means to be closer. To Upasana, Upanayanam ceremony, that's all word comes from that. Upasana means to be closer to somebody. Upasana. Especially in relationship with Krishna, it's spoken Upasana. Upasana means to be closer to Krishna. Upasana Lalasa, that being attached to being closer to Krishna, Sri Narada Maharshi came to Dwaraka. That is what he says. Govinda Bhujaguptayam Dwaravatyam Kurudvaha Avalsil Narado Bhishnam Krishna Upasana Lalasa. Narada Maharshi, being desiring to be closer to Krishna, arrived in Dwaraka. Kunu Rajan Indriyavan Mukunda Charanambujam Nabajel Sarvado Mrityu Ava Upasya Amarottamehim. That this is very important point. That Sri Narada Maharshi had come. Why? Upasya Amarottamehim. That he wanted to Nabajel Sarvado Mrityu Upasya Amarottamehi. Nabajel Sarvado Mrityu. Sri Narada Maharshi is seeing the truth and he is telling us what is that. Sarvado Mrityu. Everywhere, what is there, what did he see? Death. Death is the only thing that is the reality in this world, isn't it? Sarvado Mrityu. Sarvado Mrityu means everywhere death. And living entities which are being exposed to death. In relationship with that, Sri Narada Maharshi is saying like this, that we are all being exposed to death. So what does it say? What Narada Maharshi is showing to us, that it is important to visit Krishna in temples and wherever Krishna is worshipped and take Krishna shelter, and that is a message from that. Sri Narada Maharshi is doing it and showing it to us, that it is so important to go and see Krishna at places where he is worshipped. And aval silma Krishna upasana lalasa, then nabajel sarvado mrityu upasya amarottamai. Otherwise mrityu is everywhere. Every moment there is death that is ready to take us away from here. Actually this is a point no matter how much it is spoken, it is difficult for us to grasp. Even there are so many things spoken about death, that Yamadharma Raja has made a list who should come when. That's already there, that who should come. And when the day we were born, that list is already being looked at, when it should be leave this body. That's also there. So actually, Yamadharma Raja doesn't turn up overnight one day, does he? He doesn't turn up one morning and say, now it's time to go. No. From every station when he leaves, he keeps sending us messages, I'm on my way. Is he not? This start growing white. That's the first message from the first station. Hair start growing white. And then the teeth start falling off. The second station, another message has come. So like this, continuously he is sending us messages that you have to leave the body and go from here. This beautiful body with whom we have identified in ignorance and so much attached to, and for which we are fighting here in this world with everybody to survive, to maintain that body. Yamadharma Raja is sending us messages in advance from every station. One email or a telegram or something is coming. And only thing, when it comes, what do? We dye the hair straight away. Oh no, I didn't get the message. Isn't it? That's what we do. We dye the hair. So that we didn't get the message. Oh, I didn't. When Yamadharma Raja comes and says, oh, I didn't know that you sent me this message. We dye. And what do with the teeth? We go to the dentist and put a nice set of white new ones. This is how we close our eyes like the rabbit. Rabbit, when it sees the danger, what does it do? It closes the eyes straight away. Isn't it? We are like that rabbits we are. The death is coming and every day it is getting closer and closer. And Srinarada Maharshi is telling this in one word. He mentioned this, that avalsil narado bhishnam krishno vasana lalasa nabajel sarvado mrityu vasyamarottamaihi nabajel sarvado mrityu. Everywhere this death is present. And what is our situation in this world? What's our situation? Where do we want to go? No, we want to hang on here, isn't it? We want to hold on to this, because we have got our little empire here, what we have created, and want to be the king here and survive here somehow, and want to ignore Yamaraja's messages, all what he has sent us. So what to do? That is why Narada Maharshi is speaking like this, that no matter how much it has spoken, that Acharya Swamiji said this while he was walking in Benares. Once it so happened that Acharya Swamiji was walking through Benares, and an old person, about 85, 87 years old, he's sitting there and he's studying grammar. That is when he wrote this Bhajagovindam prayers. Bhajagovindam, Bhajagovindam, Govindam Bhajamudhamade, Sambrate Sannihide Kale, Nahi Nahi Rakshadi Dukranyukarane. Dukranyukarane is the one of the grammatical terminology which is repeated by this old person. Acharya Swamiji stood there and looked at him for a minute and said to him, what a nonsense are you doing? At this point in time in life, if you study grammar when you are 8 or 10, it's worthwhile. It will be useful for knowing the language. At the age of 85, if you study grammar, what is the use? What purpose would you gain from them? At that point, you need who? Bhaja Govindam, Bhaja Govindam, Govindam Bhaja Mudhamadhe. You stupid idiot. He addresses him like this. Mudha. Calls him Mudha and tells him, Sambrate Sannihide Kale. When the time comes to leave this world, Sannihide Kale, the time is approaching closer and closer. Acharya Swamiji could see that and saying to him, Sannihide Kale, it's getting closer and closer and you are busy with your grammar. He says to him, what a nonsense are you doing? What Acharya Swamiji said that time, if you look at it today, it is much more interesting. 90 years old, playing in the stock market for shares. This is what's going on. They are playing in the stock market because he wants to make money. 90-year-old man. 88 years old, in the morning gets up, takes his golf bag, goes to play golf in the beautiful sunshine, it's the day for my golf. 88-year-old. Sits in front of the television, watches the program one after the other, accepts all the miseries of this world, every possible way, and suffers from that. 90-year-old person. So even after coming to that age, no detachment is coming from this world. What can we do? This is our situation. That Vairagyam is not coming. Vairagyam is not coming. There is no renunciation. There is no detachment. Not enough. Still thinking, I'll make some happy life in this world. This is called Maya. Maya's ways of punishing us is like this. Even at the time when enough notice has been given to leave, that very soon we'll be taken out of this world and we have to leave our material body here, still we do not want to accept the reality. That is what is happened to most of us. That is why it is said here that Nabajel Sarvado Mrityu Upasya Amarottamehi Amarottamehi. That if you want to become, if you want to get out of this changing business of bodies, changing the body, then Upasya Amarottamehi, that one has to serve Krishna. That is the only way one can free oneself from this from this situation. Sarvado Mrityu, Krishna says, it says here. Narada Maharshi says, Sarvado Mrityu, everywhere there is death. That death is following us like a shadow from the day we were born. From us, like a shadow, it's following us. But we are not able to, we don't want to look at it. Ahanya hani bhudani, isn't it? Dushyanta Maharaj said in the Mahabharatam, Ahanya hani bhudani gachandi yamalayam. Syasham savaram ichandi. Rest of the living, everybody is leaving one after the other. But Vishnu Maharaj is saying, this is the greatest wonder, that it will not happen to me. All others are thinking, I will stay back. Others may go, but I will be here still. Ahani ahani bhudani gachandi yamalayam. Yama's home, to Yama's place they are living. Shesham stavaram ichandi. Rest of the living entities are thinking, oh no, no, I will be here. I won't be going. That some mistake happened to him. It's nothing to do with me. This is how we think about it, isn't it? So, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ekadasha Skandam is saying here that Upasyam Amaryavottamehi, that long ago, one king caught hold of a criminal and decided to punish him. The crime was so heavy that he decided to hang him. His name was Bukunda. This story is in the Yoga Vasishtam. Somewhere it's mentioned like this. So he was Bukunda. So they decided to hang him and they brought him in front of the king. So this person, this criminal, he was very fascinating person. Seeing the king's mood of punishing him, he felt that probably king is thinking, he will not die, only I am going to die. So he thought, rather he may make king also aware that one day he will also be dying, not only me. So he took up a lot of courage and told him like this. What did he say? He says to him, he says, Bhatti died. Bhatti was the name of one person. Bhatti died. Bharati died, he said. So, Bhatti died, Bharati died. Then he said, Bhikshu died. Bhikshu was another person. Bhikshu died. Bhimasena also died. Bukundan is going to die. And Bhubadi will also die. Do you understand the connections? Ba ba bi bi bhu bhu. He says, Yamadharma Raja, don't call in the alphabetical order anyone from here. It's not based on, like in the school when they take the register, it's based on the alphabetical order, isn't it? But Yamadharma Raja, when he calls people, Yamaraja, when he calls, it's not based on alphabetical order. So he was saying to him, even if it is so, my name is Bukunda, because Bha, Bhatti. Bha, Bharati. Bhatti died, Bharati died. Then who else died? Bhikshu died, Bhi. And Bhimasena also died, Bhi. Then me, Bhu, Bukunda also died. Now the next one is you, Bhupadi. King is king's another name is Bhupadi. You are all, he is also going to die. So if you think you are not in the list, don't get fooled by that. He says, you are also going to die one day. So he mentioned this. So Mrityu sarva, like Sukadeva Goswami is saying here, that Nabajel Sarvado Mrityu, death is everywhere, who, no matter who it is, how great the personality is, he has to die one day. He has to leave this world. That is one, it is spoken like this. Then, Mrityu, death is unavoidable. Everyone has to leave this world, and that is absolute. And when this is spoken, people do not want to hear this, isn't it? Oh, every time you go to the temple, although I want to get cheered up, I've gone to the temple and I've been told that you have to die one day. I didn't come and waste all my Sunday afternoon to hear this. I will sit and watch the television or something else which gives me some different kinds of pleasure. So, so it is in the Bhagavatam, this one point is to wake us up. That is why the whole thing was spoken to Parikshit, who was also going to experience death. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, if you look, at the very end of Bhagavatam, there is a verse in the 12th canto. What does it say? Vijnana vairagya vivakshaya vibho vajo vibho der madhu paramarthyam. Vijnana vairagya vivakshaya vibho. There it says that all these great, great kings who is referred to in the Bhagavatam, for example, King Ambarish, Parikshit Maharaj, Yudhishthira Maharaj, and then Vritrasura, and so many great, great kings' stories, Ramachandra, King Ramachandra, all their stories were mentioned in the Bhagavatam. For what? And also in the 9th canto, you will see an endless list of kings mentioned there. And their glories, that's all spoken there. And then Sudeva Goswami says there, they all had to go from this world. They also had to go. Vijnana vairagya vivakshaya vibho. I did not speak all these things to tell you about their glories. But on the other hand, you should conclude from this one point that vijnana vairagya vivakshaya vibho, in order to understand and become vairagyam, to develop detachment in this world, I have spoken that this has happened to them, vacho vibhudir nadu paramarthyam, not for any other reason I have spoken, but in order to understand, bring this vairagyam to you. Therefore I have spoken this, says like that in the Srimad Bhagavatam later. So in Bhagavatam you will notice this, that that this one point is brought to our notice. Upasya amarottamai. Why all this is spoken is, because from now on in the Bhagavatam, what Krishna is going to talk to Uddhava, and also this Sinarana Maharshi's discussions with King Nimi, with Vasudev, is all related to death. So when we are talking about death, we are not ready for it. We want to sit here and make our life going well. We don't want to talk about death and what happens after death. But because in order to prepare ourselves for that, Srinivasa Maharshi says here that na bhajel sarvado mrityu upasya amarottamai. Sarvado mrityu, there is only death you can see everywhere. That is what you see everywhere. Then, So, therefore, what is the solution? Srinarayana Maharshi shows that also. Go to Krishna. That is the solution. That is why he went to Dwaraka. Krishna was Vashana, Lalasa. Not that Narada Maharshi was exposed to death. But we, who are the living entities, who have to change the body every few years, has to approach Krishna to free ourselves from that. So, earlier, you will see there, in the Bhagavatam, that there was a statement. Here, we comes why one should serve Krishna. One should serve Krishna because muktim dadahi karhi jilsmana bhakti yogam. Bhakti is the process. One should serve Krishna. One should use one's time and the lifetime for serving Krishna. That is the message. So mukti is concerned. Mukti is liberation, isn't it? Actually, strictly speaking, mukti and bhakti are similar, are same thing. But in different contexts it is spoken like that. That one who is practicing bhakti, he is already properly practicing bhakti. He is already liberated. One who is properly practicing bhakti is already liberated. Muktim dadahi karhi jilsmana bhakti yogam. Sudeva Goswami said to Parikshit, Rajan Padar Gururalam. In the Ushvadeva stories it says like that. That muktim dadahi kahi jalsmana bhakti yogam. Mukti I give easily, he said. But bhakti, it takes time, for Krishna chooses the person before he gives bhakti to anybody. that why was it spoken? It was in relationship with that incident in the fifth canto. When you look into that, you will see that what does actually bhakti means. That also we have to know why it is spoken like that.
Muktim dadahi karhi chilasmana bhakti yogam.
Mukti Krishna gives. Hiranyakashipu also got mukti, isn't it? Kamsa also got mukti. In the Bhagavadam, if you see, while referring to whom all Krishna has given mukti, Shishuvala got mukti, Dandavaktra got mukti. So many personalities, they got mukti. Krishna has given them mukti.
Muktim dadahi karhi chilasmana bhakti yogam.
But when one gets bhakti, then it is a little different case. They all got mukti when they left the body. But the difference is, when one is, while executing Krishna consciousness seriously in one's life, he is already mukti. He has already got mukti. He is already liberated. That is how the great authorities talks about that. For him, there is no separate endeavor. He doesn't have to endeavor separately for mukti, provided he is executing Krishna consciousness according to the instructions of the acharyas. That is why it's saying, it is said like that. What does mukti means? Mukti means constant association with Krishna. Never separated from Krishna for a second. Never separated under any circumstances. Never separated from Krishna. That kind of consciousness. That is what mukti means. So, this devotion, bhakti, what one has to cultivate is spoken in different ways. How all of us have some kind of feeling for Krishna. But due to our association with matter, we are all infected by Maya's activities. And therefore, what does this bhakti comes to? How does bhakti comes to? There are different stages in bhakti. In different levels, people practice Krishna consciousness. For example, that generally through examples it is easy to understand this devotion, different feelings or different experiences of Krishna for the devotees. For devotees, how they experience. In the beginning when one takes to Krishna consciousness, one takes to the process, isn't it, which is called the sadhana bhakti. He starts chanting, he starts following the regulatory principles, he starts meditations, or he is studying Srimad Bhagavatam or Bhagavad Gita. Like that, he starts the process. He starts the process. This is compared to the monkey's life. Eh? Monkey's life. Why it is like that? Is that in Shastram there is a terminology used, Markada Kishora Nyayam. Markada Kishora Nyayam means Markada is the mother monkey and Kishora is the baby monkey. We are like the baby monkeys. Baby monkey has to hold on to the mother monkey all the time, isn't it? Mother monkey won't carry the child. Baby will not be carried by the mother. Baby has to hold on. Have you seen the monkeys when they jump from one tree to another? With the baby holding on to them, they will jump from one branch to another. They can jump like that. Baby won't fall. Mother won't care. Baby is supposed to catch hold of strongly to the mother. Otherwise, gone, down, finished. So, but they will carry on like this. Therefore, the devotee's position also is like that. He has to hold on to Krishna. Because he is in that stage at the moment, in the beginning. He has to hold on to Krishna. So, normally there is a plant called Angola. Angola plant, the fruits from this Angola plant, what happens to that is, when it falls from the tree, it starts jumping from the floor. And it will go and stick with the trunk again. And it's very difficult to get it out from the trunk. And this Angola fruit is actually used in the Ayurvedam for making different medicines. So this Angola fruit, it falls on the floor and it falls and straight away falls into the trunk. Goes and hits the trunk and stick to the trunk all the time. Doesn't come out from that. So normally what they do, they bring ashes and put ashes on the ground. Once you put the ashes, when the Angola fruit falls, it cannot come out from there. It gets stuck in the ashes. And they pick it up from the ashes later. So something similar to that, we are stuck here. We have to hold on to the to the process. We have to hold on to the process. And Krishna is also like this. All our activities, for example, the chanting the holy name, deity worship, meditation, Srimad Bhagavatam, everything is in that stage, at that stage. It is at that stage. Just like this baby monkey's position. We are doing everything and we are holding on to Krishna to our capacity, and everything depends on how much strongly we hold on to that, we survive. Krishna doesn't give much of a push at that time because we have not surrendered to Krishna yet. We are not surrendered to Krishna. We have accepted the process, but we are not surrendered to Krishna. The whole success of bhakti process is how much one surrenders to Krishna, Sharanagari. That is what it is called. Sharanagari, how much one surrenders to Krishna. That surrender is not there, and because surrender is not there, Krishna is also deals with us in the same way. Deals with us in the same way. So it doesn't progress. So in that stage, one stays for quite a long time. As much as one progresses, and one through study of Bhagavadam, and also from the realizations in the whatever little realization he gets from his sadhana bhakti, he starts progressing. And accordingly, his dependency on Krishna increases. His dependency on Krishna increases. And at that point, what happens is, his attraction for Krishna increases. Apart from the dependency, he gets automatically attracted to Krishna. His attraction comes in a natural way. Just like in the magnet attracts the iron filings. The filings automatically gets attracted by the magnet. In the same way, by Krishna's glories or Krishna's attractions, different ways one gets attracted to Krishna. That is the next stage when it happens. That he gets attracted to Krishna in an automatic, in a natural way, and at that time the attraction is so strong that he finds it difficult in the absence of Krishna. That he continues to surrender and at the same time execute his spiritual life to his capacity to please Krishna. That time the mood has changed. Earlier it was like that he is holding on to. Now it is Krishna is holding him. That is the stage when Krishna takes care of the devotee. And there, in Shastra, the word used is Marjara Kishore Nyayam. It's like the cat and the baby cat. There, because he is dependent on Krishna, Krishna carries him all the time. Krishna takes care of him. Like the mother cat, how does the mother cat carry the baby cat? Bites the baby cat. You must have seen, at the throat it bites and carries around with the baby. The mother carries the baby cat like that. Therefore, at that stage is called Marjara Kishore Nyayam. Markada Kishore is the first one, and the second one is this Marjara Kishore Nyayam. There, the devotee has already accepted everything, that whatever life offers me, I will accept it, I am not going to complain about it, my business is to please Krishna. This position has come to him. Previously, that attitude was not there. Previously, he is doing certain things according to the instructions from the Shastra, either chanting the holy name, or studying Srimad Bhagavatam, or doing meditations, or deity worship, everything done according to the instruction. But now that instruction stage is gone, attachment has developed inside. The result is that he wants to serve Krishna. He cannot stay without Krishna. Gopi situation, for example. That's mentioned like this, the Gopastri, gopis were like that. They could not stay away from Krishna. That attachment has built up. And it's like the baby cat. Baby cat also, what does it say? Meow, 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 isn't it? What does it mean? If you speak in Hindi, it is correct also. Because the baby is saying to the baby is saying to the mother, meow, let me come. Same things with us also. We are also saying to Krishna, meow, meow, let me come. So it is like this, that meow stage has not come. We are still in the baby monkey stage. And we want all realizations at that time. Because in spiritual life, particularly in the bhakti process, the success depends on one's surrender to Krishna. Whole success in bhakti yogam is nothing but surrender. Surrender does not mean that you throw away everything and go and surrender to somebody and eventually get cheated and run away from whole thing. That's not the surrender what is spoken about. Surrender in Krishna consciousness means that Krishna is the understanding. That Krishna controls my life. Everything what's happening to me is by Krishna's arrangement. I am not the doer, neither I am the enjoyer. Everything what I have is Krishna's. This realization, if you read Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sharanagari verses, there is a book available on Shanagari, it will clearly explain the stages how one surrenders to Krishna. How one surrenders to Krishna. So when that consciousness is built strongly inside, that is proper surrender. That whether you are here, elsewhere, doesn't matter. That's why bhakti process is so beautiful. Under any circumstances, one can execute bhakti, so long as he has that attachment and attraction for Krishna. So, so like the baby cries, and Krishna says, "Don't this chanting the holy name, what is it? It is nothing but the cry of the cat cries like that, we cry through the holy name. That's all. By chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Continuously chanting is nothing but calling out for Krishna. Isn't it? Where is the difference? There is no difference. So at this stage, it is only chanting the holy name that will perfect us in that way. So when the chanting becomes perfect and the mood of the devotee is right, then that chanting is very effective. It is no point in chanting all the time with all big, big plans in this world that I've got so many things to do, but I've finished my 16 rounds, it's finished now, now I've got my projects going on. That is not how the chanting works. The chanting is to mend, to make us aware that it is just like exactly like the way the baby cat is holding on to the mother. We have through this crying process, we have to hold on to Krishna's lotus feet. That is what is expected from us while chanting the holy name. So, Markada Kishore Nyayam, Marjara Kishore Nyayam, two things. Now, there is another stage. What is that stage? For example, in after a devotee has gone further, he realizes that that comparison is given like this. A chaste wife, she always remembers her husband. Similarly, a loving husband also remembers his wife, isn't it? There is no requirement of anything else in between them. They can always remember each other. After marriage, a relationship has been built up and that relationship has grown over a period of time. And when it comes to maturity, the attachment is so strong that they find it difficult to be separated. So, to such a wife, wife doesn't need a photograph of the husband to look at. Because without a photograph also, the wife can remember the husband very well. Similarly, the husband can also remember the wife. Even if he goes away for places, still they will remember each other. So attachment has grown further in there. And another stage, again if you go from there, is just like a creeper on the tree. A creeper on the tree. A creeper is separate from the tree, is independent of the tree, but at the same time it cannot stay out of the tree. It has to be always closer to the tree. Just like a creeper on the tree. And then again, finally another stage comes when it is compared to the river. The river is always flowing towards the husband. Who is the husband of the river? The sea, the ocean. Ocean is supposed to be the husband. So the river cannot wait. It is in a rush to get to the husband and goes there and joins the sea. So in different stages, Krishna consciousness also in a person, when it grows through different stages. That is why it is spoken like this. But always we should remember that our stages in all these things is like this monkey stage. That's where we are. That we haven't gone far from there. So we shouldn't stay in that monkey state also. That is also mentioned. That it is the beginning stage that one is situated in that level. And then, so when one comes to that platform of Krishna consciousness, that he realizes that the absolute truth is Krishna, and only Krishna is the truth. Only Krishna is the truth. Remaining everything else is not the truth. It's all relative truth. What we experience in this world is the relative truth. In fact, strictly speaking, all this science is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita very elaborately. If you study Bhagavad Gita and if you reflect on this, Krishna has spoken about these things in detail. But what happened was that through Bhagavad Gita, when all these things were spoken, some people said, what is spoken in the Bhagavad Gita is only possible for sannyasis. Only such people can execute spiritual life. as mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. Some people were this opinion. Only sannyasis can do that because it is not possible for ordinary people to do it. It's not possible for ordinary people, particularly householders, got wife, children, working in this world. Such people, how will they execute the instructions of Bhagavad Gita? All the instructions in the Bhagavad Gita is only practical for sannyasis. Some people said, well, it can be practiced, but after retirement, at the very old age, you can do it. Till then it cannot be done. They said like that. Well, old people can do it. Some other people said, no, it can be done only by brahmanas who have got that brahminical nature or brahminical strength, brahminical culture in them. Such people can execute. Some other people said, no, human beings can do it. So different people came up with different ideas that spiritual life can be only executed only by the sannyasis or by older people or by brahmanas or by human society general. They can. What about others? If you exclude all this, what about the others? Why should they not also have an opportunity to do? So, in order to make this point very, very clear to us, Vedavyasa Maharshi wrote Srimad Bhagavatam more or less like a commentary for Bhagavad Gita. It is Bhagavatam, if you look very closely, you will see there, it is nothing but a detailed, elaborate commentary of what was spoken in Bhagavad Gita. That is what is Srimad Bhagavatam. But Vedavyasa Maharshi took very special care here that in Srimad Bhagavatam, who all are mentioned, who are all discussed there, there is all great personalities are discussed there. Big, big kings, they got liberated, went away. Demons, they got liberated and went away, isn't it? And what type of demons? Look at Prahlada. Very much within the womb of the mother, he gets instructed and he gets liberated and goes back to the spiritual world. Prahlada, a boy who is not, he's not even born yet, he is very much within the womb. At that time, he receives instructions from Srinarada Maharshi and it works for him. It works for him. Now, you may ask a question here. How come? How can it happen? When this is all very interesting in the Bhagavatam, if you take all these different scenes in Bhagavatam and think about it, how could that happen? Because this is a question to ask, isn't it? We are hearing Bhagavatam, grown-up men sitting here. Nothing is happening to us. Prahlada is in the womb of the mother. And the womb, what is the situation in the womb? Imagine, no intelligence. Intelligence has not developed. So intelligence, it is not working, isn't it? Logic. Will any logic work for Prahlada at that time? No logic is working either. Because he does not understand. What logic? A 5-6 months old baby in the womb, what logic will it understand? It's sleeping there, isn't it? In Sushupti state, it is there. Or yogic state, you can call it. So, Prahlada is there. Mother Kayathu, she is carrying him. She is carrying Prahlada. So, at that time, Srinarada Maharshi is instructing Prahlada on spiritual knowledge. If you read that verses in the Bhagavatam in the seventh canto, when Srinarada Maharshi went to visit Prahlada in the womb of Kayadhu, and you read those instructions what Prahlada was given by Narada Maharshi, you may wonder, how come a baby of 5 months old can understand all this? You know what he discusses there? Jagrat, Swapnam, Sushupti. These three things Narada Maharshi is discussing with Prahlada, who is inside the womb of the mother Kayadhu. Just see. So how did it work then? Isn't it? A question will come. So, in order to explain that, so Jagran Swapnam Sushupti, three states were discussed there in detail by Srinarada Maharshi to Prahlada. So, Prahlada is one personality in the Bhagavatam, very, very interesting. Because he receives instruction at a time in life when he is not even born, very much in the womb of the mother. Then you take the example of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj instruction. How old was Dhruva? Dhruva was 5 years old. When we are read Ekadasha Skandam and all these instructions, we don't understand. But Dhruva understood all that. Because you know how you know whether Dhruva has understood it or not? If you read Dhruva's glorification of Krishna, when Krishna appeared in front of Dhruva, look at the first verse itself, how Dhruva glorified Krishna. That verse will answer your doubt. It will tell you that yonda pravesha mama vachai mama amprasuptim, that all these things, 5-year-old boy is speaking like this. 5-year-old boy is saying this. That all this is working. Anyamsha hastacharana shravanam tugadim pranan namo bhagavade purushaya dubhyam. Anyamsha hastacharana shravanam tugadim pranan namo bhagavade purushaya dubhyam. Anyamsha hastacharana shravanam tugadim. This is coming from the lips of a 5-year-old boy. Anyamsha hastacharana shravanam tugadim. That because of your presence, Dhruvaraj is saying to Krishna, because of your presence, Krishna is present inside, isn't it? So, whole process of spiritual life is nothing but waking up Krishna inside us, who is present inside us. That realization, how to understand that Krishna is inside. That is why it is said that looking outward doesn't help, looking inwards is necessary. This, our inquiry is always outside. We are wandering around the whole universe. And this is the biggest blunder we make. The scientists do exactly the same thing. Going to this galaxy, that universe, this planet, Mercury, Mars, this, everywhere. They are also searching for Krishna. But in a way, they don't know where to search for him. Hiranyakashipu also used to search in the same way. The scientists are not much different than that, in that sense. If you remember, in the Bhagavatam 7th canto, Hiranyakashipu, when he came to know Vishnu is present, Vishnu is behind him, he was looking for Vishnu. Scientists are also looking for Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu was also looking for Vishnu. Hiranyakashipu went to the heavenly planets. Where is Vishnu? They were looking for him. He went to the hellish planets, the lower planetary systems, looking for Vishnu. They couldn't find anywhere. Why? Strictly speaking, it is Vishnu everywhere. The word Vishnu itself means what? Vishnu means one who is present everywhere. Vishnu means one who is present in everything. Omniscient. That omnipresence is Vishnu's nature. So Vishnu is present everywhere, but we don't know where to look for him. This was the mistake Hiranyakashipu did. And all the big demons make this mistake. They will look for him everywhere else, but they don't know where to look for him. And our people, our great scientists also do the same thing. They want to know the truth, isn't it? In other words, they are also looking for the truth, Vishnu. But only thing is, they are looking for him in the moon, in the Mars, in the Saturn, and in the other galaxies, here, there, everywhere. But they are not finding him. What to do? So that is why, from beginning of Bhagavatam, this one point comes out. If you want to look for him, you have to look inwards, not outwards. If you run around looking for him everywhere, you can run. The run will continue. Whole life you will run. You won't find him. But because that is why in the Upanishads the statement is like this. He is closer than the closest. He is so close to us, but at the same time he is too far from us. He is the farthest from us. Which is also true. For those who are realizing the truth, for them, he is so close. But for those who are not closest to him, he is the furthest point. He is so far away from him. That is why such statements in the Upanishads. Because of this only. That he is closer than the closest. And he is the most distant from anybody else. So that's why. So Prahlada got that instruction. Prahlada got liberated. Dhruva Maharaj, 5-year-old, he got instructed, he got liberated. Who else is in the Srimad Bhagavatam? You will see Katwangan, King Katwanga. He was a king, great personality, who went to the heavenly planets and fought the war with the demigods for some time. Eventually he came back and he got, in a very short time, he managed to get liberated. So Katwanga got liberated. Parikshit Maharaj got liberated. Another king. He was only in a 7 days' time, he got liberated. And then we also have the story in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Vritrasura, a demon. He got liberated. And who else got liberated? Among women, Devahuti Devi got liberated. Gopis got liberated. And among animals, Gajendra, elephant, got liberated. So, Srimad Bhagavatam is pointing out one important thing to us, that if you study Bhagavad Gita and think that it's only possible for very elevated people to get liberated, Bhagavatam is saying no. Bhagavatam is not is saying no. It's open to all, open to anybody, whether they are demons, whether they are devotees of high caliber or high devotional nature, women, children, even within the womb before born, and also animals, cows, they all can get liberated if they become Krishna conscious. So that is the beauty of bhakti. In order to illustrate that point, Vedavyasa Maharshi brought Srimad Bhagavatam to us to make us clear that anyone can approach Krishna. Anyone can approach Krishna. There is no rule that only such people can go to Krishna. Anyone can go to Krishna provided he take to this process of Krishna consciousness. That is why it is spoken like that. That before the body drops off, let one try for this chance given to him. That's what Krishna wants us to do. Therefore you will see in the end, that is why all these examples are given. That Prahlada's story, for example, coming back to that again, that Prahlada was instructed. So how come Prahlada got it, but whereas Kayadu didn't get it? Why? Why is that? This clearly shows that the person who gives that instructions also has to have that potency in him. Due to his ability to transmit that message to Prahlada was such that Narada Maharshi was able to offer that to Prahlada effectively, and it had its effect on him. Whereas Kayadu heard the message, nothing happened. Why? Because Kayadu fell into Sushupti at that stage. Jagran, Sapnam and Sushupti. Kayadu went into Sushupti, whereas Prahlada inside the womb heard the message and took advantage of that. It worked on him. It worked on him. So, an important point is that bhakti process, if you get the association of a great personality, which is discussed in the Bhagavatam later, and you get that mercy from that person, that is the highest favorable thing in one's spiritual life. What is that is going to bring him further then. So this happiness of bhakti or Krishna consciousness can be experienced by anyone. It is not it is not only limited to one group of people. It is open to all, whether it is children, babies or children, or adults, grown up, kings or women, or demons or animals, or doesn't matter, anyone. So many different examples in the Srimad Bhagavatam for this purpose, that bhakti process is open to all. Anyone who takes to shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, he has got the opportunity to serve him, and he can get liberated from this world, irrespective of what body he has got. Irrespective of what body he has got. Sometimes people think, oh, I am in this body, what can I do? No, that's not true. Even in that body, they have got liberated by their attachment to Krishna. So, coming back to the Bhagavatam, we'll see there. Govinda Bhujaguptayam Dwaravatyam Kuru Dvaha Avalsil Narado Bhishnam Krishna Vasana Lalasa Konuraja Nindriyavan Mukunda Charana Ambujam Nabajel Sarvado Mratyu Upasyam Amarottamai Tamegada Duvarsh Devarshi Vasudevo Grihagadam Archidam Sukhamasinam Abhivadyadam Abravil. So it is under these circumstances that once when Srinarada Vasudeva Maharshi, Vasudeva's home in Vasudeva's palace, Devarshi Narada Maharshi arrived there. Archidam Sukhamasina Abhivadyanam Bravil. He offered him a seat and received him properly. Abhivadyanam Bravil. That Abhivadyam means to welcome a person properly according to the Vedic etiquette. He received him properly and spoke like this. Vasudeva Uvacham. What did Vasudev say? Vasudev says, Bhagavan Bhavado Yatra Swastaye sarvadehinam kripananam yatha pitro uttama shlokavarpanam.
Then this time Vasudeva is saying to Sri Narada Maharshi, Bhagavan bhavado yatra swastaye sarvadehinam.
You have come here not for your benefit. You have come here for our benefit.
Not only our benefit, means everyone's benefit.
Because you travel for others' benefit. Otherwise they could sit in one place, isn't it?
What is the need for Sri Narada Maharshi to travel?
There is no need for him to travel. He is self-satisfied. There is nothing disturbing him. He has no desires disturbing him. Nor he wants anything in this world.
So such a soul, such a realized soul, who is completely absorbed in Krishna, he does not require to need to travel anywhere. But still he travels.
Why? Bhagavan bhavado yatra swastaye sarvadehinam.
For the benefit of other living entities.
Why? Kripananam yadat pitro uttama shlokavarpana.
Kripananam. Kripananam means, kripanam means, you know the word kripana. Kripana means miser.
It's a very interesting word, kripana.
Most of the world, almost all, belongs to this category, kripana.
Why it said kripana?
Kripana means, if you break that word, karpa.
In other words,
our dealings in this world is like that. We'll do something, we want the returns from that. This is called kripana.
Kripana means we won't do anything in this world unless we get something out of it.
And we have been doing this thing whole lifetime, isn't it?
In every dealing we have done like this, kripana.
Kripana means miser. That we keep on doing things and so long as we get the benefit, we will do it. Otherwise we won't do it.
In other words, do something and you get it, you will do it. Otherwise you won't do it.
Absolutely.
Otherwise there is no doing.
So this is called karpanyam.
Krishna also says this in the Bhagavad Gita, if you remember, karpanya dosha bhakrda swabhava prachami thvam dharma samoda chedaha.
So this kripana karpanyam is not a good nature for a person for in spiritual life.
So it said like this, that kripananam itha pitro uttama shlokavarpanam.
I was a kripana, Vasudeva is saying, in order to show mercy to them that you had come. This is why he said.
Then kripananam yatha pitro uttama shlokavarpanam.
Because this karpanyam is in everyone. This nature is in everyone.
Because he says here, bhutanam deva jaridam dukkhayaja sukhayaja sukhayaiva hi sadhunam tvadrishayam achyudalpanam.
In the next verse, if you look, what does he say?
Bhutanam deva jaridam dukkhayaja sukhayaja sukhayaiva hi sadhunam tvadrishayam achyudalpanam.
Demigods in this world, they are also like that. If you please the demigods, they will give you something. Otherwise they won't give it to you. Will they?
For example, you see,
this nature of the demigods is not very much different than us in that aspect.
They relate with us in a similar way.
And in the Bhagavad Gita, if you look, the same thing is spoken. What is it saying?
Devan bhavayadanena te deva bhavayanduva parasparam bhavayanda shreya paramavapsyatha.
Parasparam bhavayanda. It's a business we do with the demigods.
What's that?
Parasparam bhavayanda.
We please the demigods with our sacrifices and other austerities, what is required to please them.
When we do that, in return, they will give us the results.
Why?
Parasparam bhavayanda prema paramavapsyatha.
That is a relationship with the demigods. It is like that.
That they will offer to you according to your offerings to them.
So that is the kind of relationship we had with the demigods.
So therefore it is said here,
bhajandiye yadha devan deva abhitathaivatan.
You worship some particular demigods and accordingly they respond to you.
Why? Chayeva karma sajiva sadhavo dinavalsalaha. Chayeva karma sajiva.
They look into what? They look into your karma, whether you are qualified to have it or not, and then they give it to you. Otherwise they don't give it to you.
Chayeva karma sajiva sadhavo dinavalsalaha.
This is how demigods deal with us.
That is what is important.
Bhajandiye yatha devan deva abhitathaivatan.
Chayeva karmasa jiva sadhavo dinavalsalaha. That demigods will respond to you nicely. But chayeva karmasa jiva, according to your karma, if you are qualified for that, you will get it. Otherwise you won't get it. Even if you work hard in this world, this is what it is pointing at. That is why two people are working in this world very hard. The same activity they perform, but one gets a result, one does not get the result. Why? What is the answer to that? Answer is this. Chayeva karma sajiva sadhavo dinaval salaha. Karma sajiva, they look into the karma, whether you are qualified to have it or not, and then they give you the result. This is how the demigods are. But sadhus are not like that. The liberated souls, they are not. There is a distinction between. Why? Because here we have to know these sadhus who had come to Nimi Maharaj's palace, they are not like demigods. Their dealings are different. Sadhunam swadrusham achyudalpanam. Sadhu doesn't look at anything. He doesn't look whether you are qualified or not qualified. Demigods look at it. Only then they will give it to you. Whereas sadhus, they don't look at anything. They give it to you. Provided you have gone to them asking, looking for it. Then they will give it to you. So that is the difference between sadhu. So, sadhureva samandam vyasamyam vavasidohisam. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? That a sadhu by nature is like that. Sukhayeva bhudanam devajaridam dukhayeva sukhayeva sukhayeva hi sadhunam tvadrisham achyudalpanam. He looks, does not look into whether you are qualified or you are not qualified. It's not important for him. As far as he is concerned, he wants you to go back to the spiritual world. He does not want you to rot here. That is his goal. So he acts accordingly. That therefore, not based on your qualification, what he offers you, he delivers everybody. That is the true nature of a sadhu. That's the true nature of a sadhu. Therefore, who is higher? A sadhu is higher. Because sadhu does not look into the qualification of a person. Sadhu accepts everybody and takes him back to the spiritual world. So, there is an interesting story about that. This one elephant died. So the elephant went to the lower planets, and Yamaraja asked him, "You are really an idiot," he said to him, the elephant. So elephant said, "Why? Why do you call say like that?" He said, "I can see that your nature, I have given you such a strong, huge body, and still you have come here to me again, looking for, going to Yamaraj means further dealings, isn't it? Didn't take advantage of that. So, first of all, I gave you that I gave you the body of a small rat. I gave you the body of a rat. And you ran around with that body, eating, biting and breaking things and trying to get something to eat, wasted all your lifetime. You didn't make any advantage of it. Then I gave you the body of a cat. There also you carried on running around other people, meow, meow, running after others, looking for food. You wasted your lifetime. Then I gave you the body of a dog. And what did you do? Again, you were loyal to somebody, showing your loyalty to them all the time and barking at others to please your master. That's what you did. So all the bodies I've given you, you have abused it. You didn't use it. You couldn't do anything with that. Then I gave you eventually this huge, strong, powerful body of an elephant. Even that also you couldn't utilize it. He said to him, like that. And why? Because even after getting this body, look at you. You are still the slave of a man, isn't it? You are still the slave of a man. You are not able to free yourself from this slavery. As a dog you are a slave, as a cat you are a slave, and as a rat you are frightened of everyone. And even now after becoming this huge powerful body I have given you, still you are a slave. What a useless character you are. He started saying this to this elephant. But elephant said, so when Yamadharmaraja said, "You are still the slave of a small creature called this man, a human being. I cannot understand your intelligence," he said. "You are so dull-headed." He said like this to elephant, "How come you are still a slave of a man?" he says to him. So the elephant says to Yamaraja, actually, you don't know this thing called man, he said. You don't know him very well. Yamaraj says to him, I know them enough. I know them enough. They have come here many times. Yeah, but you see them only when they die. After that you see them, isn't it? He says, you don't know when they are living, what they are like. It's about the human being. This elephant is saying to Yamaraj, you don't know what they are like when they are living in this world. So Yamaraja says to his servants, go and get one man from somewhere. Bring him over here. What is he saying? What is he talking about? This elephant. See, so these four of his men came down to this planet and they are wandering around. And they are wandering around. Underneath the tree, one sannyasi was sitting there on a cot. On a cot. You know, one of these cots which are tied with the ropes. They sit on cot. And the Yamarajas, the servants thought, he's an old person, he's a sannyasi, nothing to do in this world anyway. So why don't we take him? After all, he doesn't have any ties in this world. And our master has told to bring one of them, isn't it? So we'll take him. So they took him with the whole bed, with the whole cot, they carried him. So as soon as they took the cot, the sannyasi woke up and he saw his four men are tearing this cot. He didn't say anything, he was sleeping. He woke up. He woke up as he saw four of them. What did he do? He put his hand into his pocket, took out a piece of paper, wrote something on it, and put it back in the pocket and slept again. Went into sleep. He slept and they brought him to the Yamadharma Raja. When he came to Yamadharma Raja, Yamaraja asked him, who are you? He says. Immediately he didn't answer. What he did was, he took out this paper from the pocket and gave it to Yamaraja. Yamaraja looked at it and read it and says there, the instruction was like this. This person who is coming now, he should be offered your place. He's going to take charge of your position. So for next many months, you will not be responsible. He will perform your role as Yamaraja there. And he hands over the chit. And at the bottom it is signed Vishnu. Vishnu has signed it. So he got this message. So Vishnu has signed it. Yamaraja has to follow it, isn't it? After all, he is the big boss. So Vishnu's instruction was there. Yamaraja offered the seat and told him to sit there. Yamaraja moved away and sat in the next seat. So he sat there. He sat there. And then other people started coming. Who? The more and more. Yamaraja's office is very busy. It's like the immigration office. It's so busy that there's no spare time. Continuously checking the files and making the decisions, judgment. So when this person sat on the chair, as soon as people came from this world, he didn't care too much. Sent straight away, gave the notice. Send the message, ticket for Vaikuntha. Send him to Vaikuntha. 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 Everybody to Vaikuntha. He started sending them like this one after the other. So in Vaikuntha, Mahavishnu was lying down and suddenly he saw hundreds of people coming to Vaikuntha one after the other. There was such a rush of people. So Mahavishnu thought, what has happened now? That somebody is working very hard to send people to Vaikuntha like this. Without any discrimination. Everyone is coming to Vaikuntha. Nobody is going to hellish planets. No other planet. Everyone back to Vaikuntha. Imagine that situation. And Yamaraja was sitting there watching this, that he is sending everybody back to Vaikuntha. This sannyasi, he was doing this. So Vishnu decided, let me go and find out what's going on this. This is because there was accommodation problem there also in Vaikuntha. With so many people coming like this, where do you accommodate? Like, we also have accommodation problem now, isn't there? So many million houses has to be built. Vaikuntha also was not ready straight away to receive so many visitors in one lot. So there also, they also have budgets, planning, everything, like here goes on. So they send them back. He couldn't send them back because they have come already. How can he send them back? Here also it's the same thing. When they come, once you are in. Then there is no going back from here. Then they also have problems, isn't it? Same thing in Vaikuntha also. You can't send them back. You have to hold them on. But immediately Vishnu got up from this Adishesha bed, came down straight away to find out what was going on. He went up to this Yamadharma's palace and eventually found out that everyone was being sent there. So he asked this person, why everybody is coming here to Vaikuntham? He said, the sadhu, this sannyasi says to him, what did he say to him? He says that my job is to send people to Vaikuntham. I have done that. You cannot complain that. And also, I have studied Bhagavad Gita very well. And what does Bhagavad Gita say? Bhagavad Gita says, Ishvara sarva bhudanam hriddeshe arjuna tishtadi brahmayan sarva bhudani yantra rudhani mayayam. I am working, he is working, everybody is working because you are inside. You are actually doing this. And now you are asking me why I am doing this. So either you change Bhagavad Gita or you accept everyone I have sent there. I have just done it because you have spoken in the Bhagavad Gita that you are doing everything. And this is what I felt like doing, so I have done that. So Vishnu says, maybe I will think of sending them back. He says, no, you can't send them back because in the Upanishads there is a statement, once you have gone there, no more coming back from there. Yad gatvana nivartande tadhama paramam mama. If Bhagavad Gita says this, isn't it? It is my abode is such, once you have come back there, there is no more going back. So Vishnu is in trouble. He has to take everybody. He has no option, in other words. Everyone. So what I was saying was, in connection with this is, a sadhu is like that. The great souls, they are not like demigods. They are demigods. Look, chayena karma sajivaha. Karma sajiva. According to your karmam, they will give you the results. But sadhu, pure devotees of Krishna, they are not like that. They don't have that business relationship with people. They think anyone and everyone, let them come back to Krishna. That is their desire. That is why all great personalities, all great devotees, they have no discrimination as far as living entities are concerned. Not only human beings, they will even take animals, birds, bees, anyone, everyone, they want them to go back to Krishna. That is their desire. That is how they operate. So, here, by the way, we are talking about this in connection with great souls who have appeared, isn't it? These 9 great yogis who had come to Nimi Maharaj's palace. Nimi Maharaj's palace. There were such great personalities that you have to remember that Durlabham Priyadarshanam, Vaikuntha Priyadarshanam, such personalities are very, very, very rare. Rare indeed. They are indeed rare to get such personalities' vision. Once you get the vision of such people, then you are back in the spiritual world. It is guaranteed. There is no more effort required. No more effort required because by the very vision of such people, or the very second momentary association, even for a second's association with them is enough. Salsangam Sheva Dharandranam says in the Bhagavatam. Even for a very split second is enough, association with them is we are liberated from this world. So when we use these verses in the Bhagavatam, we have to be careful in what context it is spoken. Otherwise we will abuse these verses without knowing the actual meaning and actual in what context it's been spoken and to whom it refers to. So it is to such personality. Salsangam Sheva Dharandranam. Their association will make a person immediately to go back to the spiritual world. It is that association what is spoken in the Ekadasha Skandam. So there is this, when we hear about this, now the next 9 yogis, what is going to be spoken here. That these 9 yogis, as you know, they were the children of the Rishabhadev's children. Rishabhadev had 100 children, isn't it? Out of that, the eldest one was Bharata Maharaj, King Bharata, who later on became Jata Bharata, and then later on he got liberated in 3 lifetimes, and he went back. And then 81 of them became very qualified brahmanas. 9 of them have become these great yogishuras, yogis. Which are Kavi, Hari, Andarikshan, Prabuddha, Pipalayana, Avirhotra, Drumila, Chamasa, Karabhajanam. These 9 yogis. It is these 9 yogis whose discussions we are going to start from now on. And out of these 9 yogis, Kavi is the eldest one who spoke. The first question was answered. So 9 questions were raised by King Nimi and 9 answers were given by each of these yogis. The first question was, what is Bhagavata Dharma? What is Krishna consciousness? The symptoms of devotion, Bhakti Rakshanam. Then next question, Maya. What is Maya? then what is the way, how to cross over Maya? How to cross over Maya? Then what is Brahmam? Then what is Karmam? And what is pastimes? Avatara Leela. What does descending means? Why Krishna descends? Why incarnations happen? What are those pastimes means? And then there is also the, is there a different process applied to different times? How one should follow? Is there any restrictions like that? This question for, and what is the fate of non-devotees? These are the 9 questions which were posed by King Nimi, and these 9 yogis have answered their questions. So you will see here that Brahmam sadami prachamo dharman bhagavadam stava yan shutva shardhaya martyo muchade sarvado bhayal. Brahmam sadami prachamo dharman bhagavadam stava. Vasudev is saying to Narada Maharshi, please talk to me about Bhagavata Dharma, knowing by which yan shutva shardhayo martyo uchade sarvado bhayal, by hearing which one will be completely freed from fear. Completely freed from fear. So that means Vasudev knows that material existence means fear, isn't it? That is the symptom of material existence. Constantly in fear. Constantly in fear. Constantly in fear. That is our material life. Everybody will agree with that. One anxiety or the other. That is constantly following us. Isn't it? So that that fear is manifests in different forms. Manifests in different forms. And what happens to us is, after getting distressed for a long period of time in life, if we don't get distressed, we feel unhappy. That happens to us at the end. This is quite common with most of us. Because after getting kicked here, there, everywhere in life, in different places, different times, by different people and different reasons, whatever it is, we get... After some time, if we don't get distressed for a few days, we feel something is wrong. That is how the consciousness becomes at the end. Is it true or not? I think that's what happens to all of us. Because it becomes our habit that to be under distress all the time, one thing or the other. If there is no distress one day, we feel something going wrong in life. Immediately we start sensing there is something wrong somewhere. Otherwise, why is it like this? Everything going well. But it doesn't happen. So therefore we also know that a constant flow of distress, that is what is following us all the time. That, therefore, and from that distress, a fear has built up inside. Everything, fearful of everything. While living, it is under fear. While living under fear. All the early days in life, fearful. What about future? That fear of the future. What will happen in the future when I grow up? What will happen? What will happen? Will there be a job? Will I find some means to live in this world? This kind of fear. After that is sorted out, you start worrying about the old age. Who will look after me? So you get married, thinking the wife will look after you. Then you start fearing of the wife. What will happen? So, or the wife is fearful of the husband. So like this, fear keeps growing. And then the children come. Then you get fearful of the children, what they will do to me next. So the fearful fear keeps growing in one form or the other. So there is no time where one could be free from this thing called fear. Fear is a constant thing. If you remember, we discussed in the earlier in Bhagavad Gita what all things causes fear to us. Even while enjoying something in this world, sense enjoyment, we have fear. Will I get sick after that? Isn't it? If a few liters of sweet rice is offered, we like to eat it. But after the first cup, you start wondering, can I manage it? Or will I be in trouble tomorrow? So like this, every stage there is fear. There is fear at every stage, in everything what we do, because of our limitations. So fear or anxiety is a part of this world, is a part of this nature. So this is where this question came up, that what should one do? See, the question from Vasudeva is very clear, that fear is a problem. How do I get out of this fear? One form or other, the fear is following me. That is how he said. So therefore, while replying, Sri Narada Maharshi did not say, I will give you the solution to that. Did you see that in the Bhagavatam? He didn't say, I will give you the solution. No. He says, a similar question was raised previously in the assembly of Nemi Maharaj when the 9 yogis came there. I heard this discussion happening there. Whatever I have heard there, I will tell you now what I heard there. Now, why is it spoken like this? This is important thing, because if we were one of them, say, Vasudeva asked us, for example, what should we say? Well, so I'll tell you the answer. And even if I heard from somebody, I won't say I heard from such a person. I'll say, I think this is what you should do. I'll tell him like that. In Bhagavatam, for one specific reason, including Krishna, will not speak like that. Why? In order to wipe out our personality. Because what are we actually? We are nothing but false ego, isn't it? The moment you wake up in the morning, first thing that comes is false ego. What is that false ego? Me. I exist. In Sushupti state, it didn't exist. That false ego had gone. False ego manifests in the Jagrat state and in the dream state. In the deep sleep, it doesn't disturb you. And it is this false ego causing all the problems. And that is what is the cause of this fear, cause of all the miseries, cause of all the problems. What we experience is coming from this false ego. That it's me. I exist. I am. I am important. I. False ego, it's called. It's an ahangaram. Ahangaram is the first thing that manifests in the morning when you wake up. First thing is ahangaram. I woken up. And then the other things follow after that. Associated with ahangaram. What are they? The mind, the intelligence, the senses, they all become active one after the other. Yes or no? Ahangaram begins the first thing. In the night when you go to sleep, what is the last thing that dissolves? It's ahangaram again. Is it not? Ahangaram, we start the day with ahangaram, false ego. And we end the day with ahangaram, false ego. Ahangaram gets diluted in deep sleep. Ahangaram goes away. We are not this false ego. But actually, throughout our activities, throughout the day, we are identifying with this false ego. And it is with this false ego that we are operating in this world. So, in order to get this false ego out from us, in Bhagavatam, whenever any great personality speaks, they will not give their opinion. It is a very subtle way of to get out of this false ego. That is the reason why it's spoken like that. Otherwise, where is the problem for Krishna to say anything? But still, even Krishna won't say like that. Even Krishna, while answering questions to Uddhava, he says, I heard from Bhishma, who was talking like this during the Mahabharata war. Of the Mahabharata war, when Bhishma was giving instructions to Yudhishthira Maharaj, I heard it and I'll tell you that. Does Krishna has to say like this? Is there any need for that? For Krishna to say? No. In order to make us aware that let this false ego, that I am the doer, I am the enjoyer, I am everything, let this get out of our head. In order to do that, in Srimad Bhagavatam, all the time you will see this way of presenting things. It is for this reason it is done like that. We have to stop here now. Now, we'll continue with the Bhagavatam from now on, till hopefully till December. And like we did last time, we plan to visit some temples in Tamil Nadu this year also, during the Christmas holidays. And basically, what we have in mind is to go to, in Srimad Bhagavatam, if you see, in chapter 87 of Canto 10, Balaram Swami, Lord Balaram, goes on a pilgrimage. Lord Balaram goes on a pilgrimage. In that pilgrimage, he visited several temples. And many of them are in Tamil Nadu. And they are listed in the Bhagavatam. We hope to visit them. And also, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his visits, travels, he also visited several holy places in Tamil Nadu. So hopefully we plan to go there. Naveen will talk to you about it in detail. All glory to Srila Prabhupada. Amen.
Hare Krishna, just to continue from where Dinadiyappa Prabhu left off, these temples are already listed and I can give them to you. All I need is your list email addresses so that I can forward them to you. Also, if you show interest, can I have your interest as well so we can communicate more directly to you in terms of giving you more specifics about the costs and the dates, which are the most important things. So if we can sort of think about what the dates we are looking at is the school holiday breaks in December. We'll give you more specific dates by end of Sunday next week, but this is just a heads up, an early warning for you to start thinking about if you want to come and visit with us. Hare Krishna.